Dr. Umberi Nahal. I'm the host of the podcast Vision to Value, associated with Nahal Group LLC, where we talk about the intersection of healthcare, business, society, and leadership. Today, we are posting the long-awaited second half of the podcast recorded many months ago with MVP Health Executive Dominic Bizzaro. MVP Health is a regional health plan that covers primarily New York and Vermont, as well as some neighboring areas, which is a really interesting plan that has both urban areas, hyper-urban like New York City, as well as rural areas in Vermont. And I wanted to space out the conversation in part because it was just so richly dense and really interesting information and regarding data, regarding human-centered design, and some really great information for entrepreneurs. So this part of the episode that is a continuation specifically focuses on whether a company, in this case, a nonprofit regional health plan, chooses to build versus buy, and advice for entrepreneurs, as well as just generally talking about being data-driven. It's a real, always a real treat to speak with Dominic. And I encourage you to listen to the last podcast to hear his storied career from being a frontline pharmacist to doing clinical reviews to starting a data company as an entrepreneur and a bunch of other stuff. Really always a pleasure, and I always learn so much. So I think you will be educated and learn a lot.
So how do you think about building something yourself because you're close to the customer versus buying something from an outside vendor?
So you had mentioned earlier that, you know, because you're in the dealt with Medicaid populations, you've also dealt with dual eligible populations. So those people that are eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid. So we have a product, Medicare Advantage products that we sell. And what we didn't have, though, we didn't have a product for those dual special needs. So we had our Medicaid customers and our Medicare customers, but we didn't have a product for the dual special need population. So we looked at that and said, okay, should we build that or should we buy it? And so we said, well, what's our internal capability? What would our speed to market be if we did it ourselves? How would we scale it? You know, if we did ourselves, how long would it take us to scale it? So what we decided was, well, here's an opportunity for us to partner. So we partnered with an organization named Belong Health, and it's a VC-backed organization, and we were their initial customer. Because what they could bring to the table is an ability to execute on a unique model of care, where we're really looking at not only the medical, but the psycho and the social needs of the population, which are in many cases more predictive of what the outcomes are going to be than the medical alone, and said, okay, we're going to work together. We're going to take advantage of the capabilities that they bring to the table so we can deliver a product. And it worked. I mean, we are the only 5-star dual special needs population product in New York State. And it was our first year. And we got it launched, but I think it was a situation where 1 + 1 = 3. We're kind of both doing what we know how to do, but then learning and educating each other in that partnership. And it made sense because we had a common target. You know, here is the customer, here is the patient that we're trying to serve, and we share values on how we want to get there. So that was a situation where we decided we're not going to build it on our own. We're going to buy some and we're going to partner to be able to deliver. And I think as a customer-centric organization, that's a good way to look at it.
Absolutely. So really what I'm hearing is understanding your strengths, understanding a common mission or common values and common target of a shared customer or patient, and then partnering and co-designing.
That's a much better way to say it.
Oh, no, but I loved all your details. I'm here to surface the nuggets.
Yeah. So, thank you for that. Yeah, no, that you've got 100% right.
This kind of leads into the next question. What trend in digital health landscape excites you in particular related to patient engagement or navigation?
Yeah, so I am excited about, you know, some of the emerging AI capabilities. And the fact that we're able to harness technology that can now deal with many different sources of data. And it will analyze it and look to produce some patterns that maybe we don't see at the surface. At the same time, like you said, it does require human processing, and it requires an understanding of the context of what they're coming out. But I think access to care is a fundamental issue. I was president of a federally qualified health center, for 3 years, and you can see that access is just a fundamental issue that affects and certainly affordability and quality, but access is absolutely key. So I think, you know, using a front end where we can collect some information from people and then be able to process it, and before we bring the human in, or for some people, bringing the human in right up front, you know, makes sense. But people getting that access, like as a pharmacist, I would get a lot of patients coming to me first because they could get to me easier, right? You know, there's that person behind the counter, and I can just give them a wave and ask them a question or call them on the phone. Whereas, you know, in the, and I know this is changing, thankfully, on the physician practice side, sometimes there's a tougher time kind of getting access to it. So I think ChatGPT can open up a bidirectional conversation. Also, when you look at access choices, we can use technology and AI to maybe help with scheduling, you know, so we can do some data collection and triage kind of upfront, get some standard questions answered upfront if people are willing to do it, and then figure out, okay, what is a pathway here where I can get this person access, the access that's required, at least as an initial step. You know, again, you need a human on the back end to say, okay, well, this is what, you know, I see on the surface, just like if you had an LPN or a med tech, you know, before you went into an exam room, collecting information, you as a clinician, when you go into that exam room virtually or physically, you're going to use that as an input. And then you've got some other information that you're going to acquire from the patient and from your own observations. I also think when you look at treatment compliance and the supports needed for treatment compliance, I think there's an opportunity for artificial intelligence to really help us there. So when you feed into, okay, this is the diagnosis, here are the treatment possibilities, but this is what else we know about that patient, the level of nutrition, safety of their home, their transportation needs, their literacy level, their background, and who they might trust. So then you say, okay, if we layer that data on, what have we found are the most effective treatments, right? You know, so if I have two or three or four methods of treating a patient, but then we know more about that patient, and we could say, what do we predict would be the best outcome? That would be nice to have in advance, right? And then I think you have a human on the back end, because we know in healthcare, a lot of the cost is driven by labor. We've seen over the last 3 years that, you know, labor can be a real constraint into this. So why not help the people in healthcare, you know, by augmenting with technology rather than using technology to replace? And there are instances where you can replace, and those tend to be areas where, as you said, machines might be better and people may not want to do it. How do we use it to help achieve the outcomes that we want? So I think that some of that verticalized AI will, over the next 5 to 10 years, really start to show some differences, hopefully, in the healthcare system.
Absolutely. So what I'm also hearing is essentially human-centered design, where you are centering on the human need rather than just being so excited about cool tech and designing tech for tech's sake. Rather, focusing on the human, what do they need? We hear a lot about, be at the top of your license. So this actually technically should do that. Unfortunately, I think what a lot of clinicians have experienced is that EHR has caused them to be data inputters.
Exactly.
Rather than working to the top of their license. So this could address burnout. It could address some of the staffing shortages. All in theory, it all depends, of course, on how it gets implemented, which is, of course, one of the things I've learned from having been both in government and a frontline clinician, and then like you, having worked in the FQHC or federally qualified health center space, which was news to me only after I got there, how different the revenue stream or billing is. such that your ability to influence that through value-based care is limited if it's primarily based on a fee-for-service model, which gets to your earlier point, you know, do we really call this a system that we're in when it's so fragmented?
Yeah, FQHCs and other safety net providers that treat without regard for ability to pay, you see the breadth. Mine was more in a rural area with some very light urban. And so the mix of patients was much different. You know, there was maybe 5% uninsured and, you know, 25, 30% Medicaid, 25% Medicare, but a good dose of commercial, because in rural settings, it's like, okay, well, this is the only place that you can get care for a 45-minute drive. So you did kind of see, you know, the broad swath of needs and how the needs vary. And in those settings, we brought care management and behavioral health into our larger health centers and then made them available telephonically and then eventually, you know, virtually in that kind of, you know, medical, psychological and social model to try to address what the needs of the population are. And you can't always address all of them, but at least you've got them into a full view. And so how do you make the most of your constrained resources? That's what I think, you know, technology can bring you. And it opens up, it takes off some of the constraints on data sources, you know, because now you won't get flooded with data. I think the EHR is an example of the solution, you know, before the problem, because the government wanted to get to scale very quickly on electronic health records because it saw, you know, some of the promise of it. So it kind of went to scale quickly, you know, and said, okay, this is the solution that we're going to use. Whereas if you can use the technology to say, what are the problems that we're looking to address, and then let the technology evolve because you're focused on these are the problems we want to address, these are our desired outcomes that we're after, then I think it can be done. You know, we were talking earlier, most innovation is gradual, you know, occurs over, you know, 10, 20 year basis. And I think with the implementation of EHRs, the country had the solution in mind and said, we're putting this in.
Yes. And then so much to unpack there too, in terms of when you have the big stick of government via mandate, and then you have the payment through, you know, since Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera, and myriad other ways, but you're creating a mandate for businesses who don't have an incentive built in for cooperation. Thus you run into the interoperability issue we're dealing with now. And when it was implemented, we weren't thinking about behavioral health as on par with or driving costs or outcomes for physical health. So there's no meaningful use mandate for behavioral health, and now they're still on paper. And how do you integrate? So there, and this is exactly why I'm not working for government right now. While I do believe in the importance of governance in general and government, I have also seen exactly these things where there are these unintended consequences as compared to what you described earlier as a regional health plan, intentionally working with a vendor, knowing your customer intimately because you are a regional health plan, having and intentionally co-design.
Yeah, that co-creation piece is absolutely critical. Like, we launched a new Medicare Advantage product in Vermont with the University of Vermont Health Network. So, you know, it was a product where you have your insurers and your care providers, your doctors, working together to solve the needs of patients and consumers of Medicare Advantage. We launched that product together, looking at these proprietary data sets of unmet needs and saying, okay, what can we deliver as a collective to address these needs? And it's been one of the fastest growing Medicare Advantage products in the Northeast. And the reason we did that is, you know, most Medicare Advantage consumers have 20, 30, 40, sometimes 50 Medicare Advantage plans to choose from. So how do you differentiate? How do you stand out in the crowd? Well, you address what people feel are missing, is missing. So these opportunities for providers and payers and aspects of the provider and the caregiver community to work together. They're out there if you share a common customer, a common patient, and you align on what your core values are and what you're trying to accomplish. And then you weave in the technology. You know, that's necessary to do it. So because if you go tech first, that's just a fundamentally different approach. And I think it's hard to bring many of the actors into healthcare along if you go tech first. And as we've been probably discussing maybe too much, you know, the EHR is a good example, right? So that might have been in some doctors' minds a tech first approach that they felt did not address all the needs of the patient and the needs of those working with patients at the level it should.
Well, and then also, I mean, it depends that when you talk about co-design or you talk about, you know, in from an entrepreneurship perspective, empathy mapping and listening to your customer.
Absolutely.
There's a customer, there are stakeholders in healthcare, the customer and the end user and the economic buyer all are different. So who's purchasing healthcare is often an employer-based plan or, you know, employer for an employer-based plan or government. The patient might be an end user. A different end user is the physician or the clinician, the hospital system. There's so much complexity that the way that we often approach entrepreneurship now that I've been studying this at, you know, in my MBA is in a much more kind of cut and dried fashion than really is a reality of healthcare. Even when you might survey physicians, are you surveying specialists? Are you surveying primary care doctors? Are you surveying primary care doctors in an urban academic center or in a rural situation as you were describing previously?
Yeah, and we've actually done job studies. We did a job study focused on clinicians delivering care to patients. And your profiling questions and then your target audience is really important, right? And so it's what is it that you are trying to understand and you're trying to improve? So you do have to target certain responses, right? Whether it's rural or urban or specialist, or, you know, when you're talking about delivering care to patients, are you talking about just MD, DO, NPPPA, or MPPA, or are you looking at the office, you know, kind of the front end of the office? So you do have to understand it. I would just say one thing on the customer. What you described is really tricky, right? Because employers are a target for employer-sponsored plans, group insurance, whether it's large group or small group. What they're trying to accomplish, we did a separate survey on that. We call them health benefits administrators, maybe cross purposes with what the patient or the end user is. So at MVP, when we use the term customer, it only means one thing. We're a regional health plan, so it's the member. You know, it is the person who is going to access the care. It is the person that we're focused on. And then we have clients that are employers and we have partners that are providers of care. We have partners, maybe brokers that would sell to those employer groups. But in the end, you're going to have to define who your customer is because you can't always have all the decisions align 100% for all the parties. You're going to be forced to make a decision. That's where I always believe that there's a real place for not-for-profits in healthcare, because if you define that customer as that individual patient and you're sharp on that, you will be forced into decisions to say, which way are we going to go here? To me, innovation is new sets of activities that create value for your customers and your company. The company part is really important because you got to be able to sustain. It's got to be viable, right? So you can continue to deliver for your customers. But in that, you have to define who your customer is. Who are you innovating for? Who are you trying to create value for?
That's really helpful to hear about needing to be sharp on who your customer is, because there'll be times when the stakeholders may not align. And as you said, you need to know who you're creating value for and who you're delivering to in terms of your customer as well as the company. This is probably a great segue into asking our final question. What's your advice to budding healthcare entrepreneurs?
Yeah, so I think it's, you know, working within the problem, finding a very high yield problem that you're trying to solve for a end user, you know, I'm going to call it a customer, and then working with one or two, certainly a small number of organizations that are interested in that customer and understand that problem, but they may not have the solution to that problem, right? So you don't really, let's say you're going to work with a health system or you're going to work with a large practice, you're going to work with a payer. You want them to understand and really relate to and say, that is a problem worth solving, rather than saying, and this is what we think the solution should be. Now, you're going to want to interact and learn what they've tried, what they haven't tried, but getting close to one or two organizations who are interested in solving that problem, I think that's incredibly important, right? So that's a high yield problem, but also recognizing as an entrepreneur, I can tell you we're a 40-year-old health insurance company. We're going to move at a certain speed. I think 3 years ago, we had new leadership come into MVP and they've moved us from 15 miles an hour to 30 miles an hour, right? But we're not 100 like you, Umbreen, and we're not 70 like a lot of entrepreneurial healthcare companies. So you have to modulate the speed and recognize that, you know, the pace at which you can move with that larger system may be different than the pace that you might be used to. And I think in today's economic environment, where we had this huge rush of venture capital money coming in over the last 3 years during the course of the pandemic, and now we're trying to make that last a little bit more, right? Some of the entrepreneurs that I've talked to, they're trying to make it last a little bit more. That might not be such a bad thing, right? Because now maybe we're moving at a pace that we can really learn and we can observe and we can iterate. So I think I would just sum it up as finding that high yield problem to solve, that unmet need, finding organizations that care about that, just working closely with one or two of them and really kind of testing it and pacing it and sticking with it. Because, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone, right? You want to go far, go together. And so I think that if you can solve it, you know, with a health system or a payer or whatever, you know, or government, whatever organization you're going to work with, that'll be your path to scaling, because you truly studied it and you know it, and you're just applying those learnings over time. It takes a real growth mindset to do it. I think you have to be somewhat humble as you're entering into it.
Absolutely. I think one thing I've definitely learned from B school is an entrepreneurship is humility is essential. You can't be wedded to your idea and believe that you're the smartest person in the room, because ultimately, if it's not a value to the customer, it's useless. So you have to be willing to let go of the idea, which I think you have to have tenacity on in terms of wanting to just having this passion, this drive, relentless desire to solve the problem, while also having the humility to pivot when you get feedback that you're not on the right path and you're not delivering value.
Yeah, somebody said this to me once, that the trick is not to be the smartest person in the room, but be in a room where everybody's getting smarter, right? So we all learn from each other. We have different experiences. And I think when you have that growth mindset and that humility that you describe, you know, then you can lead with your curiosity, because you're open to learning more and you want to apply it. And entrepreneurs who are on the path of solving that problem, and those are the best entrepreneurs that I've certainly worked with, they're going to stay with it for a while. You know, they're going to stay with that problem for a while. And I think in healthcare, there's lots of complexity. So you have to be resilient. You have to be ready for the marathon.
Marathon with short sprints as well. And between.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what's exciting about working with healthcare entrepreneurs is once, you know, they've got it nailed down. They don't see obstacles, you know, they're going full speed ahead. So it's like you said, you're going to stay on this path for a while, but when you have that opening, now you work with these entrepreneurial organizations that can really react and they can iterate. They're agile and literally work in sprints.
Well, I think that's a wonderful way to end, and a very positive note about while there's a lot of complexity, there's a lot of problems to solve, which is good news for entrepreneurs. There's also paths forward. There's ways to innovate, collaborate, and to really deliver results.
And it's a noble cause. So we need great entrepreneurs out there. Lots to solve, but I think a bright future ahead.
I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experiences.
Thanks again for inviting me. Appreciate it.